Farmer threw a dead pig into a dry well. After a short while, 70 or 80 mice jumped into the well to eat it. After finishing the meat, they realized that the walls of the well were so steep that it was impossible to climb out. Within a few days, hunger turned the well into hell. To survive, the mice began killing and eating each other. After half a month, only one mouse remained in the well, its eyes red like blood. Then the farmer lowered a rope, pulled the mouse out, and released it back into the field. Did the farmer's heart melt? Not at all. Because this mouse had become used to eating its own kind, it no longer ate grain. Instead, it started hunting other mice like a mad creature. This is called the divide plan. Those sitting at the top do not fight themselves. They simply create an environment where the people below begin fighting each other and eventually destroy one another. And the truth is, many people spend their entire lives trying to defeat others without realizing that they themselves have already become part of someone else's game. So never fall into traps created by others, and if you do get trapped, don't fight. Find a way to get out.
I'm Karen Bass, and I'm running on my accomplishments.
Los Angeles on fire, mayor nowhere to be found.
We were so prepared for wildfires. I didn't even have to be in the country when the town burned. I've addressed the homeless problem. Now, most of them won't stab you as long as you don't make eye contact. Our climate change policy is so strong, we've brought down energy use in the Palisades by 99%. Almost none of the needles in children's playgrounds have AIDS on them. If you like the last 4 years, you're going to love the next four. Vote Bass.
If you were the president, what would you do?
I would declare war on Israel. I would cut off, I mean, at a minimum, I would cut off all foreign aid. I would let Iran have free will to do what they want with Israel. I would kind of let the problem probably take care of itself, to be honest, because if we stop defending Israel, I think they would get what they deserve. They have been persecuting these Palestinians. They've been operating in apartheid. They've attacked all their neighbors. I mean, they bombed seven countries in a year. They continue to just have unprovoked aggression. I mean, they are a total terrorist nation. I just don't understand how they're not qualified as a terrorist nation. They have nukes. They acquired them illegally. They refused to sign the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. And they said that they would just kill everybody if they feel threatened. So please tell me, Alex, how does that not make them the greatest terrorist threat to the world today?
I like having the internet and computers, and I like being able to go to a fucking Walmart or a Best Buy anytime I want to, you know? I don't want to have to, like, grow fucking potatoes to survive, because that sounds fucking terrible. That sounds like dog shit.
I got 0.8 miles to the Best Buy, bro. That's elite growing per zip code, yo. Walk out my door, see the blue and yellow sign. Closer than you, that's how they know I'm divine. Your town's got no Best Buy, sad, many such cases. Mine's got a geek squad within spitting distance of my basement.
Because you're all fucking idiots, and I'm laying everything out for you. Like, I'm literally, like, leading a horse to water. Hey, here's a big fucking lake. Please drink out of it. You're like, think I'm gonna eat some dirt instead. That's you. You're a fucking moron, dude. Go live in a fucking trailer park in the middle of Arkansas. Please leave my society. I want nothing to do with you fucking midwit freaks, dude. Please.
Proximity is status, distance is shame. If you're more than 2 miles, you're basically lame. We measure our worth in Best Buy feet. Scream at our moms while we sit in our seats. Women and kids, pure degeneracy. Give me 10Ds and 50 80s with a warranty. She texts, hey, wanna hang out tonight? I reply with a map screenshot, pure spite. Look, Stacey, I'm all 4 miles away from the holy shrine where they price match on New Egg Day. She says, that's weird. I say, okay, roasty. Then I rage post about falling birth rates mostly. Proximity is status, distance is shame. If you're more than 2 miles, you're basically lame. We measure our worth in Best Buy. Scream at our moms while we see that our seats. Women and kids, pure degeneracy, pure degeneracy. I'd rather fight the
Proximity is status, distance is shame. If you're more than 2 miles, you're basically lame. We measure our worth in Best Buy feet. Scream at our moms while we sit in our seats. Women and kids, pure degeneracy, pure degeneracy. I'd rather fight the manager over an open box fee.
Okay, well, so it's all about Nick. It's all about just this narrow...
Yes, it is all about Nick. It's Nick or nothing. You. You are not going to save the white race. Arville is not going to save the white race. Nick Fuentes is going to save the white race. Not your dumbass. Shut the fuck up. Keep your fucking cocksucker closed. And stop talking about Nick, all right?
Welcome back to the Return to the Land podcast, at the land, where we do, in fact, survive on potatoes.
Yes.
We grow in boxes.
And
here.
There is, no, in fact, no Best Buy anywhere near us. We'd have to drive like 2 hours.
At least 2 hours.
To a city that has a very high black demographic percentage. Right.
So stay away, groypers.
Yeah. It's scary down there in Memphis.
And we're here with Devin Stack, Black-pilled. So welcome, Devin.
Thank you very much for having me.
Of course, yeah. So this last week, we usually start off by talking about our homesteading wholesome activities. My chickens, so I drive like 2 hours away to get this breed of rooster. Not a lot of roosters found locally at the moment on Facebook. So I made the drive, brought it down to 40 hens that he had to himself. And every day he like hops the fence and goes to hang out in the neighbor's yard. So I've been corralling that rooster mostly. And then some internet work. And then I was like dog sick for 2 days. So
yeah, it's allergy season. I've been sick for, this is probably the third day. So maybe tomorrow will be better. But, you know, just trying to keep the garden alive and keep the goats alive and all that. Keep the chickens alive and still have almost no ticks around my house because of the guineas, which is really nice considering everywhere else around here, it's like a huge field of ticks and chiggers. So
they're more or less controlled on our lot up here too.
And they're not as bad this year as they had been.
No, not at all.
In some previous years. So
you guys haven't been affected by the great tick plague I keep seeing on, conspiracy sites.
I saw that and I'm like, what are they talking about? There's no ticks here. There's usually tons and tons of ticks here, but there seems to be.
Well, I've been taking them, putting them in boxes and then depositing them in random fields.
Yeah. Full of Lyme disease. Well, don't chickens eat ticks?
Oh yeah, they do. Mm-hmm. So definitely a good reason to have, do you have chickens?
No, someone that lived down the road from me used to be a cockfighter back in the 90s. In fact, one of the reasons why he hates the Clintons is they outlawed cockfighting. That's not one of my beefs with the Clintons actually, but you know,
yeah,
I guess
there's a lot of other things you could criticize them for.
Yeah, right. than banning cockfighting.
Yeah. But Arkansas side is one of the main ones.
Right. But he's real upset about that stuff. But he has these angry. It's the same genetics of the chickens they used to breed for cockfighting. So he has these just really pissed off, mean birds that were bred to be murderers. You know,
so
of
chickens
other birds.
That behave like geese, basically.
Yeah, they'll chase you around, and roosters are, they can get that way anyway. You know, even like the non cockfighting ones. And his are pretty mean. But yeah, he likes them because he keeps them around because they eat up all the bugs and because he's got other livestock.
Definitely. And like table scraps, it's a way to recycle them. All sorts of reasons. Really no reason not to, I think.
I saw a video where a chicken was like eating ticks off of a dog. I haven't gotten mine to do that, but I think it would be really useful.
Oh, yeah. So what homesteading activities you have set up? You got your bees, of course.
Right. Yeah, that's the bulk of the homesteading. Well, I've got quite a lot of cactus fruit that it's difficult to process, and because the cactus fruit has they're not like needles. They're almost like hairs. It's almost worse than needles, right? Because needles you could just like pluck off or whatever.
I thought you just use like a brush to get those off.
Not the way that these are like I use a flamethrower basically to burn them off.
Yeah.
Cause they burn off like hair would burn off your arm if you know, with a lighter.
Well, that sounds better anyways.
Yeah, it is more fun. You throw it on like a big grate and just blast them with a couple shots of fire and they're good to go. And so you can make some cool stuff out of that, out of the fruit. And so I got that, a lot of that fruit starting to ripen. And so I'll be collecting those. And then we've got mesquite beans. You can turn the mesquite beans into flour and it's actually pretty good. It tastes like, almost like it has like a brown sugar taste to it. And then, yeah, mostly the bee stuff.
Well, sweet. Enough to keep you busy.
Good to focus on like one or two main things for homesteading. Otherwise, you get overextended and have like 5 million side projects trying to produce everything under the sun.
Yeah.
The crowd says we have to talk louder, by the way. You and me.
Right. Yeah, I saw that. So.
Could also turn down Devin so it equalizes a little.
Mm-hmm. Well, with a community like this, it's really nice where one person can specialize in, say, chickens and producing eggs. Someone else can specialize in beekeeping and honey, and then we can have trade and stuff like that. So
we got a lot of good homesteading groups on Facebook in this area too.
Oh yeah, there's outside
a lot of animal breeders and stuff. So
tons. We
can trade with all those people.
Mm-hmm. All right. Oh yeah, I also got a goat milking stand for free. We're helping people out with their alpacas, and they gifted us their old goat milking stand.
So. I built one out of like 6x6 timbers.
Oh yeah,
it's gonna last 100 years.
Yeah, it doesn't entirely constrain the goat. She's still like bucking around, but definitely a step up. Yeah. And it elevates them, so you can sit on a stool comfortably.
Yeah, the RTTL branded mug that I'm drinking from is actually full of raw goat's milk. So
I'm sure it is, actually. All right. So there's a lot going on, actually, in the news, in our spheres. White boy summer is apparently started very aggressively this time. And we'll see what kind of sign that portends for the broader movement over the summer. Things are kind of contested on X and the online space, as there's now kind of a new civil war on the right wing. There's typically a civil war at least brewing, but it's in full-fledged glory right now with Dan Blazarian on one side and Nick Fuentes on the other. I chimed in a bit. People know I have issues with Nick. Devin, I believe you have also some issues with Nick. When it's 109 friendships ended, is it always the other person's fault? I feel like there's got to be a pattern here at this point.
Right. And look, with Nick, I would never consider myself his friend. I think we exchanged DMs like maybe three times over like a 10-year span. I was on a stream with him once, but it was like, again, it was almost like 10 years ago. And so we were never like buddies. But I always kept an eye on and see where, you know, his show was going because he was a gifted, rhetorically, he was gifted and he had like a very diehard fan base. And for a time, at least, he seemed fairly pro-white. But at the same time, there was just something. Well, obviously, there was the fact that, you know, we're genetically dissimilar. Like, you know, he's not related to my ancestors. I'm not related to his. And a number of other missteps that were pretty, you know, phenomenally out of step with anything I would ever do, like everything from supporting Yang, you know, years ago to the Kanye fiasco. And it just seemed more like, oh, this is like entertainment. This is just, this is like a show for Zoomers that, are, you know, growing up in a much more racially diverse reality, I guess, than I did. So they're more tolerant. And so it is a lot of his friendships, you know, although they weren't with me, seemed to be with non-whites. And so I just thought, you know, whatever, it's not, I don't really have anything in common with this guy, except for maybe a couple of things. So.
Right. Yeah. He turned on me on a dime. And I, you know, obviously I had some criticisms, but the American founding stock people, like, we have a culture of civic engagement and expressing our differences of opinion and that being normal. So I'm going to, since this is my country, my ancestors founded it, I'm going to act with Nick the way I would with any other Anglo-American, even though, as you point out, he's not like us. He has a different background. He's like Mayan or something. Aztec. So,
yeah, he's like founding stock Mexican, you know? So,
right.
And they have a much different country down there.
Right, which, you know, hey, they can have that country, and we need a different country with different norms up here. But I decided to back off myself after our last falling out until basically he came out against Casey Push, which, you know, whatever you want to say about his campaign, did he try as hard as he could? Were his chances good? I mean, he was someone sticking his neck out there and standing up for what he believed. And there are so few people willing to do that, that they all deserve our support. And calling them losers when they sacrifice on a personal level for the greater good, you know, calling him a loser because he didn't have a great shot at winning, which is actually to his credit that he was willing to take on the risk, even though he probably wouldn't win against Vivek, who was supported by, you know, tens of millions of dollars in donations from the establishment. So I thought that was just too far. And then Dan came out saying Nick is a Fed. You know, I don't know that for sure. Could he be an informant? Maybe. He said some very suspicious things on J6 and then somehow escaped consequences. And these days, he does seem very willing to make deals. And, you know, he got on all the big shows somehow, back to back, and then kind of dropped the most hardline talking points when he got there, talked more about his biography and built up his brand. So it's like, I'm kind of sick of it. I'm sick of this guy.
There may have been some shekels involved with all
there
that.
There probably are. He cares a bit too much about those. But I think ultimately it's good. I mean, I blocked like all the Groyper accounts that have been harassing me. And so they can have their part of X and do their thing. And now we get to actually build something fresh, useful, productive, aimed for Heritage Americans. So it was probably put off for too long because too many people wanted to make accommodations to get along for the greater good with this guy. But hey, it's water under the bridge now, I guess, in a certain sense, and we can move on in a better direction, hopefully.
But right. Now, he never really passed up an opportunity to throw not just, you know, people like you and me under the bus, but I mean, nationalists that were he seemed to have a bone to pick with Anglos specifically, you know, going after the Australian nationalists, always celebrating their defeats. You know, anytime one of, you know, like when Joel Davis was put in jail, he celebrated it. You know, he was enemies of the British nationalists, you know, was always talking shit about them. I think he has a issue specifically with Anglos. And I think that you were onto something about the, you know, that bitter racial animus that you've witnessed in just, you know, garden variety Mexicans exist in him. And that's something that I experienced too. In fact, I was kind of surprised that, you know, obviously, I think, you know, the reasoning he used to justify his turning on you was much more like out of left field than even me, because you tried to handle it privately. Mm-hmm. And I took a little dig at him pretty, you know, not exactly. I wasn't talking shit, but I was talking shit about what he had said. And that is, you know, if you're telling people that if they're born in America, that this is their birthright, then fuck you. You know, that's the opposite of what I'm trying to accomplish here. And I said as much publicly, and that flipped him out. But I think what really pissed him off with my interchange with him, the private interchange we had, was the fact that I mentioned that the reason why this was unacceptable to me was I was founding stock. And I mm-hmm. feel like that was the response was the way that it was, because I pointed that out. And there is a little bit of this bitter seething racial animus that he has against white people, specifically maybe Anglos. And yeah. It is what it is. As you said, I blocked. I mean, it's funny. You don't really have to block that many. Like prior to blocking any Groiper accounts, you know, you'd say anything even remotely critical. And it was weird how quickly and you'd get like people that don't even follow you suddenly saw this tweet and were, you know, calling you a Jew or just, you know, not addressing what you said, obviously, just saying some stupid shit or copy paste. No motion or aura, ankle biting, you know, whatever is on the list of six things that they were told to say by Nick. And then instantly there's like, you know, 500 likes on all these things from people, again, people that don't follow you. And you're just like, how did you even see this?
It screams of bot activity. Cause even if they were all like on Discord coordinating all their stuff, I don't think they'd be able to get that kind of activity. There's gotta be a lot of bots involved. There might even be some like unit 8200 type stuff involved. It all seemed a bit suspicious to me the way they were orchestrated on X. And that's why it's better to just block and ignore them.
Yeah, while I was still on good terms with him years ago when he went on Cozy, that's when I started really noticing that the live chat acts like it's full of bots, where it's all the same phrases spammed over. And that's how live chats are sometimes to an extent. But then like interspersed with that, you would see like a normal person's typed out comment.
Right.
And it wasn't with this general cadence and all the emojis and, you know, all caps. And then the numbers, too, I'm fairly certain were buffed back then. And I think a lot of it's insecurity. I think the Anglo thing is also insecurity, where he has spoken before about how the Anglo stock heritage Americans should be elevated as the normative like trendsetters for the country. We are the founders of the country. There should be cultural deference given to us. He used to say that, but like in practice, getting him to defer to any actual white man is impossible. He won't do it. He won't even speak like positively of Thomas Massie. I've heard him rag on Thomas Massie. When Massey's like the one guy actually trying to expose corruption and pedophilia and so forth.
And release the Epstein files. And we all know how Nick feels about Jeffrey Epstein and his proclivities.
Too,
but lest this become a podcast about Nick Fuentes, I do want to start covering some of the news stories we have lined up for tonight. And the first one is actually a local story that we've been covering on this podcast for a few weeks now. About the drag show in Hardy, Arkansas. And Hardy's about 15-20 minutes away from here. As we reported on in the previous podcasts, a local gay rights activist in Hardy, Arkansas, experienced major pushback from city and county residents after renting the town civic center to hold an adult-themed event at the end of May. He incorrectly accused Return to the Land, us, of instigating the resistance to the event. Really, there's a lot of people in the local area that don't think it's a good idea. So last week, we reported that after the pushback, they announced the attendance would now be restricted to ages 21 plus. So they stopped allowing and advertising for the attendance of kids. That was a great win. Now, more recently, on Monday of this week, there was a city council meeting in Hardy. There were a lot of people in attendance. A number of longtime local residents, concerned parents, and even the pastor of a local church got up to speak against the drag show. And the drag show's gay organizer, who was at the meeting because he had to give a report to city council because he's on the board of the civic center, he actually got up and walked out when one of the speakers began complaining about his inappropriate online conduct, calling people Nazis. He even runs a Facebook page, sort of like airing people's dirty laundry. And he threatened to dox and blackmail local residents. So he actually couldn't even take the criticism anymore. So unfortunately, Hardy's current mayor, Ethan Barnes, still supports the gay agenda being forced on Hardy by a few out-of-state LGBTQ activists who have moved to the area. He will likely lose his next bid for re-election. And remember that Mayor Barnes oversees a town that just last year had its police chief, Shane Russell, arrested for allegations of child sexual abuse. Town residents said they had complained about the police chief's conduct with this minor numerous times in the past to town officials, and nothing had been done. So leadership is a mess up there. People are starting to get involved and realizing you have to go to town meetings, you have to speak out. And it's like this all over the country, wherever you are. You got to start going to your town meetings and seeing what's happening and figuring out if they're trying to like a slip a data center behind you without you figuring it out. You know, speaking out against the LGBTQ themed events at, you know, children themes events and things like that. If you're not going to these meetings, the people who are liberal activists, and they're going to try to do whatever they can get away with.
Mm-hmm. And events like the drag show there That's an opportunity to out people in your local community who are hostile to your community's interests. People like that, the mayor at Hardy, might slip by for years and, you know, no one really thinks twice. Oh, he's just the mayor. But these sorts of issues, if you organize resistance, if you get people to talk about how they feel, then you can actually have political pushback, but not if you don't organize. So a lot of people kind of like criticize RTTL for not being politically engaged. But not every organization has to be a political organization. By having non-political organizations where we organize and relocate to the same places, obviously, now that we're here, yeah, we're going to be more engaged, more involved in political activity as individuals.
You have to do your civic duty. Wherever you live, yeah, you have to do your duty as a citizen. And part of that is to get involved in local politics if you're able.
So even though RTTL isn't political, well, the fact that it's bringing a lot of like-minded people here to an area that already has a large majority of folks who share our sentiments on most issues, really, probably including the racial issue, the fact that we're doing that is going to amplify our message here locally. And it can be done in other places. So you shouldn't underestimate the value of just a few key positions that could make the difference between your area being overrun by H-1B migrants working for data centers or a bunch of new farm workers. Like, big projects generally have to be approved by local municipalities. So as Peter said, it's your civic duty. You have to get engaged. But acting totally by yourself, well, it's probably not going to lead very far. Organizations like RTTL allow us to have a bigger outsized impact, not as an organization, but our members can get more organized. By the same token, Patriot Front or the Active Clubs, any opportunity to get together and build camaraderie, that's an opportunity to find, okay, how can we make a difference in our local area? How can it be us collectively showing up and voicing support for a message or opposition to a message, rather than, you know, me being one kind of annoying guy showing up to a town hall meeting?
Yes.
Well, I think, you know, demographics is destiny, not just in the macro, but in the micro. You know what I mean? Like, so just like you said, by getting a lot of white people gathered in one place, it's just, even without even organizing, you're going to have a political impact on that area simply because you're changing the demographics in a positive way.
True. Yeah. No, very true.
So the big story of the week, obviously, is Chud the Builder single-handedly starts both White Boy Summer and Rahoa on the same day, which is really an amazing accomplishment. Chud, a white man known for live streaming the N-word, shot a black man in self-defense after being attacked in front of a courthouse in Tennessee. Chud was surprised when local leftist prosecutors immediately pressed charges of attempted murder, despite Tennessee having strong stand-your-ground laws. Montgomery County District Attorney General Robert Nash said that Dalton Etherly, better known as Chud the Builder online, opened fire during a dispute near a courthouse around 1:15 local time. The victim was medically evacuated by Life Flight and is in stable condition and somehow wasn't arrested for the assault. Hours after he posted bond on Saturday, which it was for a previous alleged crime, Chud the Builder shared a clip from a live stream where he taunts a driver in the street, mocking him with monkey calls while using a racial slur.
So we may not all agree with Chud's tactics, okay, but the fact that he was out there standing up for our right to speak freely and express our sentiments, whatever they may be, like, that's something I personally have a lot of respect for. I haven't corresponded with Chud, but I do think that, you know, it's not what I would do. I'd rather he was out there with the freedom to do it. And where I would really stake my stance on this issue is that if he loses, that is bad for free speech. That sets a negative precedent for free speech. If he wins, that's good. Now, it's happened before where a black person accuses the white person of using the N-word, for example, and then they'll assault the white person and get off with no charges simply because, well, they antagonized me by using that word. And it's ridiculous. I mean, I see people ostensibly on our side. I see Groypers in various replies on X trying to make the case that he was out there antagonizing people. And that's not free speech. It's like, no, that's what free speech is about. It is largely given to us in order to antagonize people and make people feel uncomfortable and provoke people. If your free speech is not provocative to anyone, then you're not saying anything important.
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head in terms of the people criticizing it, because you're looking at free speech in a very Anglo way, and that's because we're the ones that came up with the concept of free speech. And a lot of people who don't share our genetics don't have that view of free speech. They see it as you should be allowed to say anything that doesn't offend people, which is, as you say, then what's the point? You might as well not have free speech. I like the fact that Chud the Builder was out there breaking the literal, I think, spell that has been cast on white people, where it is just acceptable that if I've done movie reviews on my stream, obviously, for years, and I go back and you look at movies going back to the 70s, it seems to be where this became normalized, where you would have a white character in the movie, and he would go to a black part of town, and he would say, "niggers" or something, and then he would get beat up, and you would, as the audience member, you were supposed to be on the side of the black people, like, oh, well, he deserved it. He should have known better than to say that, and there's obviously, people can think of the Die Hard movies. I forget which one it is, where you have Bruce Willis wearing the sign because he's dealing with like some, psycho serial killer. And he's like, oh, you have to wear a sign, that says, "I hate niggers" in the black part of town. And then we'll release the hostage, or, well, I don't remember what it was, what plot point it was, but the same sort of thing. It was just acceptable. And if it wasn't for the Samuel L. Jackson's character, the noble savage version, the black noble savage that came to his rescue, in that situation, he would have been, killed, and rightfully so, by the black people that are allowed to have murderous rage when they encounter this word. And it's been so injected into the browbeaten heads of, especially white boomers, but I would even say Gen Xers and even millennials. And I would say especially Zoomers, who, apparently they're okay with calling each other nigga, but make sure it's with an A at the end, and even then it's kind of taboo. It was nice to see a guy out there that was breaking that taboo over and over and over again, and getting people to not feel as if they were held captive by language. And it's weird, because you can go back to, the fact that there's a term, the N-word, boggles my fucking mind. Because you can go back to even television shows, like news shows from the 1980s and 90s, and they say nigger, as long as you're not calling someone else a nigger. Like, the word nigger wasn't like this, oh my God, he uttered it. It was in Hollywood-produced sitcoms, where they would say the word nigger because it's just a word. It wasn't until you were like looking at some guy hatefully and saying, "You're a dirty nigger," that it became all of a sudden that was off limits. And we somehow leapfrog into some bizarro world where white people aren't even allowed to utter a sound with their mouth, and without basically forfeiting their right to personal safety. And it's almost like, and alternatively, on the other side of that, blacks were told, "You have license to kill anyone that makes this sound with their mouth." It's like you train an attack dog, and every time you say gingerbread, it goes and it attacks whoever's in the room. And it was just like, what the hell's going on here? And so it was nice to see this guy. Again, I don't know his politics. I don't know him from Adam. I've never talked to the guy. And I'm sure there's, maybe things I wouldn't like about him or whatever, but it doesn't really matter. I like the fact that there was this guy very vocally, very, I think effectively, at least from maybe his stream sucked, but like the clips that would go viral, I think it resonated with a lot of white people, where they liked it. They'd like to see someone, a white guy that wasn't going to shrink and apologize the second some black guy said, overheard him saying nigger. And so I like that he existed.
Yeah. Yeah, and I actually, you know, I'm not for violence. I'm not really for provoking people in public spaces as a rule. I wouldn't do it. But I do want black people to think twice before assaulting white people. It's like, we don't impose consequences harshly or often enough, actually. That's why we're victimized so disproportionately. That, and yeah, they have obviously more of a disposition to turn violent more quickly. But, you know, in the past, white men would stand up for ourselves. We would impose costs. So, I mean, Chud imposed costs and stood up for himself. And whether he did what he did perfectly, or he could have been executed better, or, you know, blurs some legal line or not, I think he does deserve our support because he's out there standing up for our right to speak freely and be ourselves, and sometimes, yeah, piss people off, which that is all right as Americans. So yeah,
and what they like to say is, you have freedom of speech, but you don't have freedom from the consequences of that speech. And that's what they like to say on the left. And it sounds like a nice little platitude until you realize, well, what they're saying is that they want the right to be able to attack people based on their speech.
Yep.
And, you know, there's so many crimes where the black person tries to get leniency or get out of the being prosecuted or lesser sentence because they claim the white person said the N-word, whether they did or didn't. There was one famous case some years back where there was a young white, like, teenage couple driving a pickup truck, and they both got shot dead in cold blood by a black person who tried to claim that they had shouted the N-word at him through the window. Now, there was no evidence of this, and I believe there is some footage that came out or something later on that some fact or circumstance of the event that proved that there was no chance that could have happened, that he literally just murdered them in cold blood. But that's enough to sway a leftist jury or a black jury. If the black person says in the courtroom, well, mm-hmm. they called me the N word. It's like, I don't know. It's like the Holocaust for black people. You know, it's this big thing. And so, yeah, I think we need to push back when they say you have freedom of speech, but not freedom from the consequences of it. Well, what are you saying that the consequences of it? Are you're gonna try to kill me if I say a certain word? But, you know, I also strongly believe that freedom of speech should only be for white citizens of the United States, the way it always was.
Yeah,
I don't think we should have extended that right onto all the people that actually want to kill us. That doesn't make any sense.
It is sort of just when you bring up that fact that they do want to impose violent consequences for using certain words. Well, if that's their instinct, is to escalate it violently when supposedly someone says word, well, then Chud escalated it one step further. And very often with violent people like that, that's kind of what you have to do. Like a problematic kid, you don't, when they start acting rowdy, you don't like soften down and try to calm them down. Sometimes you actually have to scare the kid straight so he'll listen to you and then calm him down and then teach your lesson. So maybe that's what this could end up being, a teaching moment for the black community from your educator, Chud.
Well, I think that honestly, it's just that the violence is the only language some people understand, and that's just a reality. You know, I had friends, for example, that fought in the Gulf War, and they said, you know, these people, we act as if, you know, we were going to get rid of their dictator, Saddam Hussein, who was this brutal dictator. And they're going to just immediately adopt American values and open up Starbucks on the corner and just, you know, they're going to be like us. And that didn't happen. The reason why he was a brutal dictator is those are the people that need to be ruled by a brutal dictator. That's the system that worked for them. Mm-hmm. And you know, there's just certain people where that's the case. And look, black households they raise their children much differently. And there's all these people that'll point to an increase in violence coming from black communities and acting as if it's all, you know, look, not that these are not non-factors, but they'll say stuff like, oh, well, because of the fatherlessness and all this other stuff. When really it goes back to what you were saying before, that the fact that their behavior comes not only without consequence, but it actually comes with incentives. If you have a black person in circa 1920 who rapes a white girl, he's going to be swinging from a tree by the next afternoon. And people knew that. And by the way, lynching was not just for black people. That was a lot of white people got lynched too for similar reasons. And you know, you had this idea, you know, this perception that if you were a black person that committed violence against a white person, that if you weren't lynched, that the court system would be especially harsh to you, because the court system was in a sense, a system there to protect the white people. And so if you were to harm white people and you weren't part of that group, then you would, of course, get a harsh punishment for that. And not only have those punishments been, in some cases, removed entirely, but the incentives have replaced them, where you get people that, in the case of that high school kid that stabbed the white kid, I'm blanking on their names right now, but they not only did his family got a brand new Escalade. You know, because of they raised something, what was it, like $250,000, even though it's obvious that it was unprovoked, or at least certainly not provoked to a lethal degree. So you have all these cases where they're rewarded for this behavior, and there is no fear of the white man putting them in check.
Yeah, incentives dictate outcomes very often, and we have to make sure the incentives are there for people on our side to stand up for themselves confidently, knowing that we will have their back. And then on the other side, the incentives have to be there to discourage people from messing with us. It's like, unfortunately, a more brutal level of politics than like the Anglo Enlightenment values of our forefathers. But the demographics are determining the quality of the discourse. And yeah, it's going to be a little bit more brutalistic and violent in the future. We're not the ones bringing that about, but we have to respond to the circumstance that actually exists. So I think there's a tendency on our side to want to, I don't know, like hold our nose at Chud and act like we're above that kind of discourse. But hey, given where the state of the whole racial conflict is at the moment, we need more Chuds, not less Chuds.
The area where Chud is, yeah, it's like 44 to 46% non-white, and I think that the prosecutors and sheriffs and everyone in that area, they almost have an incentive to be anti-white, because the slim white majority in that area, you know, definitely not 100% of them are far right. You know, probably a fair percent of them are, because it's Tennessee. But there's probably plenty who think he did something wrong and should go to jail. Would never believe that he was engaged in self-defense, even if they saw, you know, 100% proof. So unfortunately, that's the system that he's dealing with. The sheriff in that county, I was looking up some information about him earlier today, and the sheriff who arrested him, apparently his daughter is spending 20 years in jail for cracking the skull of a toddler at a daycare that she worked at. Jeez. And the sheriff used to have like a daily, and she's white, by the way, he used to have a thing where the sheriff's office would post a daily mugshot report of all the mugshots of people that got arrested that day by his department on social media. And hey, the day that his daughter got arrested for cracking the skull of a toddler at a daycare, the department stopped doing that. That's not the best situation to be in, to get arrested for self-defense in an area that's almost 50% non-white, where all the public officials want to be pandering to the non-white populace, because even if they don't agree with what they want, they're scared of riots and things like that. So right. The deck is in some ways stacked against him. Hopefully they just overcharge him and can't get a conviction.
Right. Yeah, I don't think he was out looking to stir up trouble in that location. I think he had to be at the courthouse because of his other parole issue. I don't think he chose that as the place to take this stand or have this incident happen. Not that he was necessarily fishing for it to happen in the first place. But yeah, so much depends on where your trial occurs and what judge you get, and the sentiments of the people there, which is why, once again, like relocating and concentrating in a few hot spots and getting more control over government and the courts in those hot spots is absolutely the way. And then if you want to do live streams on the street confronting people, well, you can probably defend yourself without getting sued. But we do have some super chats. So we have two ways you can do that now. One is natively through Rumble, which you guys are evidently figuring out already. And then the other is the Give, Send, Go. All donations go to the RTTL Legal Fund. We have an ongoing battle on multiple fronts, actually, legally speaking. And it is ultimately going to pan out and make a big difference for communities like ours, not just RTTL, but we do hope one day that precedent will be set and it'll be easier for others to follow in our
We're going to get regulatory clarity on how white people can buy land and live on it together.
That'd be awesome.
In a way that all the other races can apparently do without any problem. But when we do it, you know, so we're working on establishing that legal, that regulatory clarity from various government bodies that decided they want to investigate us for no reason.
Being told no is also progress here. They don't necessarily have to decide in our favor that, yes, exactly what you're doing is fine, but we are determining what is the threshold, what is the limit. So it is very important. If you like your rights, you want to preserve your rights, then defend us, defend people like Chud right now, who is also determining that line. Where exactly does self-defense end? And what are we allowed to do in the public discourse? So, but those super chats. So I don't know if they're all collated somewhere. It's all, can you start at the top of them? So we don't miss any. Yeah, let's just start from the very top. So O'Haley, you have a troll causing a scene in chat. He's also a pro-white counter-signaler. His name is Night Nation. Yeah, Night Nation has been banned, and like, we don't know who this guy is, but the entire chat was going off celebrating.
All the 317 people in the chat apparently know everything about Night Nation.
Yeah.
We're just learning about him for the first time.
It's a notorious menace in the community, but now handled.
Is that a super chat? That's five subscriptions. What does that mean?
Scott's swift action. Factory Bros gifted five subscriptions to Return to the Land. We don't know what subscriptions mean, but thank you very much.
Enlighten us as to how Rumble works, chat.
Yeah, please teach us how Rumble works. Pistol for $5. Thank you. Thank you. NNR is a doxing asshole. Okay, so yeah, celebrating the guy who is banned. Kill Your TV gifted one subscription to Return to Land. Again, not sure what that means, but thank you. We're pretty sure. Thank you. Pistol for $1. NNR has been harassing us for months. Is this a guy from your chat?
Did you bring NNR here?
Yeah, I haven't known him to dox anyone. I mean, look, I don't know. Maybe he has. I don't know. But I've actually been on his show once. He was nice to me. So.
Oh, yeah. Well, we just banned him, apparently.
So. Okay. Well, I know there's people that hate him. I don't know if that hate is legitimate or not. But he's always been cool to me. So
yeah.
I don't know.
No, there were like fireworks emojis when we banned him
okay. In
the live chat. So yeah, they have strong feelings.
Mighty Mouse,
good job, mods. That yeah, everyone's celebrating this guy getting kicked. Night Nation Review Jew is causing all kinds of problems in our community. Next one, NNR is a huge problem. Lost Nation for $1, thank you. Huge problem. Night Nation Recon, thanks for banning NNR. He's a creep. Literally, these are all the paid super chats too. Like the unpaid ones are also against Night Nation. Night Nation Review is rumored to be Puerto Rican. Pistol for $2. Thank you.
These people really don't like him. There is a comment above about Night Nation and 16-year-old girls.
All I'm seeing is free Chud and like F Night Nation. Frojax for $5. Big love and support from the Frojax brothers. Yeah, everyone check out their stream. Definitely to up and coming guys in our scene. We've got your back on the Knicks situation. Unfortunately, hearing about Dan's Jewish ancestor. Oh, yeah, right. So Dan's 12% Jewish, apparently.
It
is what it is. Wait. Scroll back up. Super curious to know Eric's thoughts on that. Oh, on Dan being part Jewish. I never, like, advocated that we should make Dan the leader of the movement. Okay, he called me up, which he had done that once before just to like ask my opinion on the state of things. And then he called me that night before everything blew up with Nick, I guess a week ago today, and like started off the call being like, I think Nick's a Fed. What do you think? And I like went through the arguments and was like, well, I mean, I think probably at this point he's controlled up. But Dan is smart and he did have subtlety. However, you know, he's not founding stock Heritage American. He's probably not suitable to be a leader of our movement per se. Race isn't even that important to him anyway. But as far as he's opposed to Israeli influence over our country, which I think is one of the chief obstacles to doing anything else good for us, like before you can start to tend to the patient, you have to remove the parasite off of it. And so if Dan can successfully do that, I don't care if he's 12% Jewish, if he's going to go serve in Congress. There are plenty of Jewish people in Congress. Like, what's 12 more percent with one guy? If
it doesn't tend to shine through, in my experience with Jewish people, the 1/8ers, it doesn't really tend to shine through in their behavior significantly. Whereas even with sometimes a 25% Jew, you can tell in their behavior. Sometimes
it kicks in the quarter.
It kicks in. I don't know what the magical percentage is, but it definitely kicks in at a certain above an eighth. It starts to kick in somewhere. Okay. Somewhere in there.
Between 1/8 and 1/4.
Yeah.
I had a very good friend who was a quarter Jewish, and he's the guy who got me to read Mein Kampf, actually. I never finished it, so I technically didn't read it. But then turned out later to, you know, like, regret his alt-right phase and so forth. Yeah. So,
well, you know, Dan's literally trying to get, you know, he's going on mainstream news and saying things like, oh, we need to hang all the Israeli dual citizens in Congress. I've seen interviews where he's literally calling for executions of those people, and that's pretty brazen. I have a feeling
if it's treason, that's the punishment for treason.
If he was 100% white, then I think that the algorithm wouldn't be letting him get so popular. I think they do that. That's one of the reasons why Nick Fuentes is pushed to be like a head of white nationalism by the algorithm, is because he's not 100% white. Candace Owens is black, and she's become very popular as like sort of this alt-right mouthpiece. And she certainly says a lot of very smart things, but
yeah, my favorite definitely streamer by far.
Something Candace with Owens. The algorithm about like, oh, you're just a little bit non-white. We're going to push you to the top, you know?
Yeah. I feel like that definitely does happen. I remember it was explicit around the BLM times that they like adjusted the algorithm to artificially enhance specifically black voices, but probably they did it according to the whole intersectionality hierarchy where white men were suppressed, and then like incrementally each next oppressed group got a boost down to like, I guess, black disabled women being the very most elevated of accounts.
Trans black disabled right. women.
Yes, of course.
Well, Scott says we forgot about the rest of the super chats.
Yeah, we should probably keep reading those. The Real Tuber for $1. Thank you very much. That guy, Night Nation, yet another complaint. No, go back up. Thinks 15 and 16-year-olds are gray area, and he's not even white. Okay, avoid Night Nation review. Yeah, I mean, that's us. We're not for that here. Pistol Ketchup Gang, $2. Thank you. Don't believe what Night Nation review says about... The Trogs. He is Puerto Rican. Okay, Shadow Band.
I've never even heard of this guy. Is he like famous on Rumble or something?
Apparently.
I think he has a lot of haters that may or may not be telling the truth. But I don't know. I stay out of all that stuff, but I've seen just in the periphery people really hate him for some reason. But I don't know anything about it really.
Well, everyone's celebrating. Like when you go back over to Devin's stream later, he's still going to be there. We didn't ban him from Rumble. In general, so
well, don't get... for the next podcast, we can set like a limit. We could say if we get 20 super chats of $5 each asking us to ban Night Nation review, then we'll do it.
Right, but I mean, he won't be banned like on Devin's stream. So.
There's like a million, like $1 or $2 super chats to get us to ban NNR. So we just have to like set a limit or something.
Okay, the Shadow Ban for $20 for the legal fund. Thank you very much for helping in the fight. Which is ongoing currently. And I think on Give, Send, Go, there were also a couple. Oh, no, we got more here. So Maple Sven, Kill Your TV makes great pro-white music. Check him out on Odyssey. All right. The Shogun for $5. /.
That's, yeah.
That thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, that thing back to you, buddy. Will of Europa for $1. NNR was around Natural Law Institute a few years ago. We're going to get good info from Will of Europa, I'm sure. He was on Good Dude's show with Brian. From what I see is just a bunch of Browns making false claims on NNR. I saw several claimed. Okay, I trust Will. And so if Will is sticking up for him, I don't know.
But apparently they were all tagging him in the chat and the chat was going crazy. So they were like spamming the chat to get us to ban him. Okay. Maybe if we don't have Devin Stack on the next podcast, this won't happen because I feel like he brought the NNR crowd somehow.
Yeah,
maybe it's just a Rumble thing. I don't know.
I think we were involved in an unjust persecution just now.
Yeah, like I said, I don't know the whole story because I don't keep up with that stuff. But I've just seen that there is a definite club of dedicated haters for, and I don't even know what it's about. I don't know the beef. I don't know the lore or anything like that. I know that there is a group of dedicated haters of Night Nation Review, and he's always been cool to me. So
okay,
well they're all here, every single one of them. They're all in our chat. They're all donating like $1 or $2 to get us to ban him.
White Hebrew Israelite for $5. Thank you very much. Recessive genes will never outbreed dominant genes, especially genes for psychology. One drop rule. This ensures that no pure Aryan can ever call a subhuman forefather. Well, because you would know by looking at them that they weren't pure Aryan. And that is the beauty of it, you know.
I wasn't saying that we should allow 1/8 Jews to be leaders of the ethnostate. I was just saying, well, you don't tend to see those behaviors come through, but I certainly don't consider them to be 100% Aryan.
Yeah. Do you think you could detect in an otherwise Aryan phenotype guy the 12%?
Well, physically, I would detect it more like in behavior. I'm better at that.
Mm.
Phenology, you know, facial structure has a way of confusing people sometimes.
Okay. I feel like I could tell, but. All right. Anonymous giver for $5 on the Give, Send, Go. Thank you very much. How does the PMA handle members who are caught participating in polygamy? Well, it's not allowed, so they would be banned. And then Sean for $5. We are Europe's colonies. The non-whites are destroying our colonies. The blacks mix with us. The Latin Americans, Muslims, and Pajits invade our countries and establish their own colonies here. And the Edomite Jews encourage it. It's basically summing it up, right? All while they all try to decolonize whites, they are erasing us. We are losing our colonies to subhumans. We brought Christianity to these lands. Well, we got a few more on Give, Send, Go as well. Thank you very much, Sean, for those remarks. Carrie Embers for $13. I'm called by my fate far away from each friend. Ye loved ones, then, ergo bibamus. With wallet light laden from hence I must wend. So double our ergo bibamus. Whatever to his treasure the niggard may add, yet regard for the joyous will ever be had, for fortune lends ever its charms to the glad. So brethren, sing. Ergo bibamus. Okay, and now I know who you are.
That was niggard with a D at the end.
Yeah, yeah,
so Eric did not just say the N-word, in case you guys
No, I would never say that word. I was going to say it, but I don't know Rumble intimately enough to bring
her. No, Rumble doesn't care. I say nigger all the time on Rumble.
Oh, yeah. So. Yeah. Anonymous giver, $5. Yeah, Carrie, I know who you are now. It was like, I didn't click.
It's Farawa.
Well, I know, yeah, his other pseudonym online, but now I actually know who he is. So.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Anonymous giver for $5. If you aren't a Zoomer male, you can't fully understand Nick's appeal. His fall from grace really began with Kirk's death. Yeah, that was very suspicious how quickly he wanted to get over it and dismiss it, too, where like he came out 2 days after with this long defense of the official narrative. It's like hardly any of the facts had really come to light. None of the analysis had been done. Like, why were you so confident so early that it, like, there was no way Israel could have been involved or there could have been any kind of inside job?
I mean, so, Israel said like hours after we didn't do it. So they were
right. So it couldn't have been
that. He was getting his talking points from them. You know, I mean, you could say that, Fuente started his downhill spiral around that time. But for those of us who never really took Fuente seriously to begin with, I mean, years ago, he was endorsing Laura Loomer for some election, you know,
right.
Look at Laura Loomer, you know,
I think they're teaming up again now.
Oh, God.
To a limited extent.
It's terrible.
Against Dan.
Of course. Yeah. And so I don't think he ever really was a serious.
Well, and the whole Kanye thing was retarded too, you know?
Yeah, especially like after he backtracked, and Nick will be infinitely forgiving with like a gay black pornographer. But if someone like me or Devin Stack says one thing to counter signal him, we're dead to him permanently. So it is odd how that works.
Yeah.
All right. I think that's all the super chats. So
So we recently mentioned a few minutes ago that there was the daughter of the sheriff who arrested Chud the Builder is in jail for 20 years for cracking a toddler's head at a daycare. Well, we have another toddler daycare related story here. UK nurseries, and I believe we have a news story to pull up for this. UK nurseries urged to report racist toddlers to police in £1.3 million scheme. This is across the pond. Childcare workers across Wales are being trained to spot and support racist incidents by toddlers under fresh guidance endorsed by government ministers and bankrolled with taxpayer cash. The push, which includes lessons on white privilege, turns playgroups and nurseries into surveillance hubs for the state's anti-racism agenda, even when the alleged offenders are barely out of nappies. The initiative, active at over 300 nurseries, playgroups, and daycares, has received over $1.3 million in taxpayer funding via the Welsh government. The guidance comes from Diversity and Anti-Racist Professional Learning, or DARPL, based at Cardiff Metropolitan University. Daycare staff are told to assess whether a child's behavior could amount to a hate crime, and if so, to contact police on 999 or 101. Apparently, they don't even have 911 over there. They have to memorize all these weird numbers. The toolkit explicitly frames even child-to-child incidents in toddlers as potential racist incidents requiring formal logging and police involvement. The UK has seen an alarming campaign to brainwash young children, including warning schools that kids' artwork risked violating Islamic blasphemy rules, teaching kids that illegal channel crossings by feral boat migrants were something to celebrate rather than something to challenge, and developing a taxpayer-funded UK government video game for kids that flags children who question open borders as potential extremists. This is the stuff of nightmares. And of course, it's worth mentioning that anybody could just move while in the United States, move to a state like Arkansas or Missouri, where the homeschooling laws are absolutely excellent and you don't, and the cost of living is much lower. So it'll be easier to raise your kids without two incomes, and it'll be easier to homeschool your kids without a whole bunch of state regulations. And you don't have to worry about the police arresting your three-year-old at a daycare for a racist hate crime because he drew something that looked like Mohammed with crayons on a piece of paper, because that's apparently something that they're teaching kids not to do.
Wow. Listen, if you won't support people like Chud, then this is what you're going to get. Like, if you let non-white groups just walk all over us and, like, attack us and punish us for slight infractions against the supposed PC code morality, like, where do you think this leads? It is the stuff of nightmares, and it is the logical conclusion of this whole line of reasoning. Of course, it's not just like pre-crime or thought crime. You have to start when they're 2 years old, 3 years old, and catch them every time they give any indication of a preference for their own race. It said in the article, I think, that they were trying to educate them to accept that the boats of migrants coming illegally, those are good things, not bad things. Like, if you are trying to brainwash kids when they're two or three on this level of fundamental value, it's like kids start believing in Santa when they're two or three. Kids will believe anything when they're that young, and they'll believe it well into the age of reason, right? Especially right. If the same government keeps inculcating them, keeps pushing it on them perpetually. The fact that this is a government program, it's got millions of pounds behind it, it's disgusting. And we shouldn't think that it can't happen here, because we're really only, 10 years behind where they are.
Yeah, so if you look at any influencer or someone like Chud or HT or whatever, or Blood Tribe, and you think, well, I don't really like those optics, they shouldn't be doing that. Well, we'll never win people over that way. They're too radical. Just look at the UK. That's what happens when you like optics cuck and worry more about that than everything else. The UK is just, it's like if RTTL can't defend the rights of white people to simply buy land together and live on it without breaking any laws, then in 10 years, they're going to be forcing us to marry black women. That's really the end result, is like forced miscegenation. That's probably what's going to start happening in Europe if they don't turn things around.
Well, one of the things I think a lot of the people on the right overlook too is the fact that one of the reasons why the left does not punish their extremists is because it makes the run of the mill radical leftists look more mainstream. And that's one of the things that the radical right, people that you might not agree with optically because they look, you know, oh, they look all crazy. They're going to paint us all like Nazis. No, they're going to paint you all like Nazis no matter what. I thought we learned this lesson like when Trump, you know, was getting called a Nazi. Like
if you're to the right of Jane Fonda, they think you're a Nazi.
Right. So don't stop being afraid of being called a Nazi. That's no different than, you know, a boomer that's afraid of being called a racist. You want to have these extremists because one of the things that they do, whether whether people think that, oh, this isn't very good because it's not going to be very persuasive. Well, in a way, it's not very persuasive to like that a normie's not going to sit there and watch, some of these more performative, radical right wing people that do things that are considered in bad taste. That might not be persuasive to someone like that. But what it's doing is in the same way I said that, Chud was removing that taboo, by saying nigger and not, being afraid to say it in the presence of black people. A lot of these radicals are doing the same thing. And it makes our positions, it normalizes in a way our positions and our the way that we conduct ourselves. And it actually makes us seem more reasonable to work with. And I think that people really don't understand the value in that.
Well, one of the nice things also about extreme radical leftists is horseshoe theory. Radical leftists have become very anti-Israel to the point that some of the stuff they say is not too dissimilar from the stuff the extreme right says about Israel, aka us, I guess we're the extreme right or whatever. I personally almost prefer the extreme radical left to the normie left, because the extreme radical left has some of the similar goals of us. Like, they generally want to eradicate the state of Israel. They see as, like, when Dan Bilzerian was talking, some of his interviews, he's using some of the talking points that the left uses about Israel, and he knows that that's good because, well, the right's going to like me because they don't like Israel, and if I use these talking points about oppressing the Palestinians and apartheid and genocide, the radical left is going to love me. They're not going to love him, but they're going to tolerate him because they're like, all right, well, all of our other choices, all the Democrats are extremely pro-Israel, so let's, they'll start to tolerate some far-right and we're not really going to tolerate far-left politicians, but we'll still take their votes against Israel-related bills if they'll give that to us,
Yeah, but I second that. You want the radical right out there on the fringe or the phalanx really driving the Overton window in a particular direction.
Yeah.
So like Jared Taylor and Hammer of Blood Tribe shaking hands meme is the spirit, I think.
Yeah. Do we have that meme?
We don't have that meme pulled up.
We can make it. Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll have that. So our next story is, we've inadvertently began this like running female judge thing because like female judges just keep doing stupid things. The first openly LGBT judge in Texas, who is a female judge, has agreed to a lifetime ban from the bench after having a defense attorney handcuffed in her own courtroom. Judge Rosie Speedlin Gonzalez, her name strangely strangely resembles Speedy Gonzalez, I don't know why, ordered the attorney into custody mid-hearing. Can we pull up the picture of her? Because ordered the attorney into custody mid-hearing after an argument over whether she'd coach her client to change his plea. The lawyer was cuffed and placed in the jury box until she agreed to conduct herself professionally. Gonzalez faced up to 20 years on felony unlawful restraint charges. Those were dropped Monday, the same day she signed the resignation agreement. She can still officiate weddings as long as she doesn't wear a robe or mention she was ever a judge. And so, typical stupid female a judge thing, using her emotions in her courtroom, almost got herself in jail for 20 years, but it gets better. Can you run that video from the female assistant DA? Female lawmakers are really on a streak this week. We're going to watch this clip from a courtroom.
I can get it to play.
I think he's going to transition the camel.
So before you sit down, there's one more thing I need to ask you about, unfortunately. In reviewing the trial court's order denying the motion for new trial, there are at least 5 citations to cases that don't exist. And there's at least 5 more citations to cases that do not support the proposition for which they're cited, including 3 quotations that don't exist. My understanding is that you prepared the order for new trial, the denial order for the trial court. Were those citations in the version of the order that you submitted to the trial court?
No, Your Honor, I do not believe so. They were not. I did prepare an order. That order was revised.
So those non-existent cases were cited in your initial brief opposing the motion for new trial.
She's going to play dumb.
Check the papers.
Say some, like, official sounding stuff.
The way his hand is on his face, too. He's so fed up with it.
Your Honor, I'm not aware.
Oh, she's not aware.
Of that, but I would be glad to research that and provide the court with a supplement.
Okay.
So she used AI.
Yeah, yeah. So a black female district attorney in Georgia prepared an order for a trial judge to sign that contained AI hallucinations of case citations and even a hallucinated quote. The trial judge did not check the citations and sign the order, leading the Georgia Supreme Court to later vacate the order when someone caught the error, which means that Hannah Payne, if you could pull up her photo, Hannah Payne now has another chance at a motion for a new trial. And it's interesting which case this was on. Hannah Payne was convicted in 2023. And
so before you sit down, there's one more thing I need to ask you about, unfortunately.
There's a video playing. Yeah. Hannah Payne was convicted in 2023 and sentenced by a black female judge to life in prison without parole after she attempted a citizen's arrest on a black man after witnessing him carry out a hit-and-run accident. The black female prosecutor who prepared the order for the denial of a new trial in the video that we just saw admitted she had used AI to draft it and not verified the citations. She has now been barred from practicing before the Georgia Supreme Court for 6 months. A slap on the wrist. And the Georgia Supreme Court urged trial courts, judges across the state to review proposed orders with the understanding that AI may have been used. This is a big problem across the country. Government lawyers, private lawyers, they're all using AI for their stuff and getting fined for it, even though they know that it hallucinates. The problem is it's so convincing, but that was just bizarre in that not only did she screw up that motion, it was on a case with sort of like racial significance in that there was a young white woman who had saw this black guy commit a hit and run in Georgia and drove away, and she went after him and tried to get him, you know, restrain him or whatever she did until the cops could get there. Scuffle ensued. She ended up probably having to shoot him in self-defense. And yeah, now she's in jail for life, and that really sucks. And she was trying to get a motion for a new trial, which was going to be denied, but because the black district attorney, assistant district attorney, screwed up by the AI citations, now Hannah actually has another chance at getting a new trial. So there's kind of some poetic irony in that, you know, black female litigator mistake.
Yeah, female judges and litigators are not doing
well,
so
I think,
great at the moment, but that's, you know, they'll get the hang of it eventually.
I think the worst part about that is it's juries, you know, like when we established this legal system in this country, the whole idea was that you would be tried by a jury of your peers. And I think it would be insane, for example, to think that, you know, like Chud, for, you know, that he would be, it'd be even possible that the people that'll end up in that jury box would be peers. And I would say that any white man that's on trial for literally anything in the United States, if the jury box is not 12 white men, that's not a jury of his peers. And so the legal system's fucked in so many different ways. I mean, the juries are going to be unfair because of that. And look, black people, just generally speaking, low key have a chip on their shoulder about white people. In fact, I would say the majority of non-whites have a chip on their shoulder about white people. And
they face a tough choice when you really think about it. It's either they accept, like, effectively white racial supremacy as explaining why we invented everything and they didn't invent anything, or they accept the colonialism and oppression narrative, and that's a lot more flattering to their egos.
And they get more gibs that way.
Yeah. So.
It's all about
right. And so obviously, because no one's, well, I wouldn't say no one, but like I said, the vast, vast, vast majority of them are not going to internalize the idea that their ancestors essentially accomplished nothing in comparison to this group that whose country they now live in. they're going to default to the fact, you know, to the much easier explanation that, you know, that speaks to their ego that actually the white man stole everything. You know, the black man invented everything. The white man came and stole it. And so, yeah, obviously they're going to have a chip on their shoulder about that. And it's impossible to get a fair trial, I think, for a white person. And increasingly, one thing I tell my audience, and it sounds worse than it is. So let me explain after I say it. But white people have to start thinking like criminals. And I don't mean that like you go out and commit crimes and you act like a criminal. What I mean is when you're like a criminal, like someone in the mafia in the mafia movie, right? They always assume that like the feds are listening to them or that, you know, they're being watched and you have to make sure you cross all your T's and dot all your I's because the feds are just looking for a reason to get them. That's what I mean is when you go and conduct yourself in business or just socially or just out in public, you have to assume that the system is just looking for a reason to get you. That doesn't mean you act like a pussy and you, you know, oh, I that's why I stay indoors and doom scroll all day. No, you still have the courage to go out there and stick to your convictions and don't sell out. But at the same time, just be realistic. Realize that when push comes to shove, the system is anti-white.
Yeah. Once again, an argument for relocation in a few counties. We can actually have our own judges eventually. We can have our own sheriffs. We can have genuine juries of our peers, right? Have our justice system the way it was supposed to work. But not across the entire country anymore. And with people now not just being less intelligent than whites like Speedy Gonzalez and the other lady, but like they're going to be relying on AI and making big mistakes. And people like competence generally is declining, probably because people are too dependent on technology and they can't actually think critically anymore.
Yeah, so. Smart people are better at using AI than dumb people. So all That's of the true. Non-whites trying to use AI to get ahead in their jobs, they're going to end up amplifying their mistakes and their dumb strategies, basically. Whereas like really smart white people understand the limitations of AI and they can use the technology in much better ways. So even with something like technology, as long as they're all using it, whites are still going to come out ahead. But, you know, speaking of technology, I've always thought that we really need to enforce the Prime Directive in Star Trek. Like, it shouldn't be legal to give technology to a black person or a brown person. They should be limited to what they themselves invented in their culture, you know? It's really actually dangerous. I mean, what happened when they give guns to Africa and they just go around shooting each other all the time, you know? They don't understand. You put up electrical transformers in Africa and they hack it down and take the PCB oil out of it and use it as cooking oil. So...
Right. And this is a concept that everyone understands too. I mean, there's a reason why they have signs at the zoo that say don't feed the animals. And it's like, I'm not calling them animals, but like it's the same concept. If you feed the animals, they lose the ability to, eat what they're supposed to eat and hunt and whatnot. And you create a problem for their ability to survive on their own. And that's, I actually did a video many years ago. It's so old, it's still on YouTube. About the Prime Directive, making that exact same point that even lefties that love Star Trek, for whatever reason, like instinctually, they understand that that's a good a policy to have. Yeah. That if you were to encounter these, you know, societies that haven't earned, you know, warp drive or, you know, whatever it is, then you don't give it to them because by leapfrogging all those mistakes that you have to make to earn that technology and the responsibility that goes with it, you are going to forever hobble them in their evolution. And that's in effect what we've done to black people. You know, like I have a little bit of sympathy for it. I mean, imagine if you were plucked out of white society. Imagine you were abducted by aliens, and this alien race, the average IQ is 200. And they beam you up into their UFO. They take you to their planet where everyone has an IQ of 200. Maybe some of them, like the dumber ones, they're like around 140, you know, something like that. And but, you know, 100 is totally unheard of. They drop you off and then like they say, all right, buddy, go get a job. And you have to now compete with in a environment where the average person applying for a job has an IQ that's several times, you know, several deviations higher than yours.
You wouldn't even be able to be like a garbage man. Like the garbage man's web would be like operating plasma interfaces and programming all the logic right in the garbage room. There would be no like entry level guy who just shoves the garbage into the chute and goes. There would
right.
be
so
no
have,
jobs that you could perform well at.
Yeah. So having these multiracial societies, it is cruel. It's cruel to the whites because you are now lowering the standards across the board. I mean, everyone's talked, well, most people have talked about how they had to actually redefine what it meant to be retarded, because if they didn't, 50% of blacks would be considered retarded, and that'd be a nightmare for like the special education system.
All
and then they
would
also
would be retarded. So.
Right. And you would have to, they also had to change, you know, like obviously just standardized testing and just like, look, I witnessed it firsthand when I went to public school that the more diverse the classroom was, the more I could fuck around and do nothing because the teacher was going to be hung up on the three kids from Guatemala that couldn't even speak English. And I could just sit there and play my Game Boy all day and I wouldn't fucking, you know, and get nothing mm-hmm. done. But I was never challenged as a result. And a lot of the white kids were, there was a disservice done to them. But, you know, alternately, you look at that Guatemalan kid, he should be in fucking Guatemala with everyone that's just like him, competing with people like that. So it's really the only people that it benefits are people who have a racial interest in deracinating white people, Jews, obviously, but also there are white, rich white people who benefit from having a workforce that can never organize. You know, like there was that famous document that came out from Amazon saying that it was better to have a diverse workforce because they would never unionize. And you can just lower the wages almost infinitely.
That's why the Assyrians would capture large groups of people and resettle them, not around their co-ethnics. I mean, that's why they took the Jews and migrated them outside of Judea. Same thing for the Babylonians. It was a common Near Eastern
they did,
despotic
So you're saying
practice.
They did forced mass deportation?
Yes, successfully.
It's pretty based. And they say we can't do it today. I mean, we have a lot more technology. Well, we could easily do it today.
Yeah.
Well, founding stock Americans did it with the Indian reservations.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you look at like the Navajo Nation. I mean, I think that we shouldn't be subsidizing it. That's like a whole thing in and of itself. But the fact of the matter is our ancestors knew that we couldn't live. They couldn't be integrated. There was no possible way we could assimilate these people and would rather give up giant pieces of land, you know, carve it out and give it to them to live on their own. And to the degree where we were actually, you know, again, I don't like the fact that we subsidize them, but you know, our ancestors, I think, were willing to do that to keep them on the fucking reservation. Right. Because if they don't, then you end up with a city like Gallup, New Mexico, which is a nightmare if you've ever been there.
No, it's true. My sister used to teach out there on a reservation, and I mean, they were nothing but blatantly racist to her as a white woman. It's like they don't feel the same way in reverse. But I do think like left wingers really should have this instinct. And I think they do have that instinct when it comes to like uncontacted tribes and things like that. Okay, we should preserve their culture intact and honor their traditional ways. Well, just carry that logic to its extension, right? And we should actually have reservations for blacks in America, for Native Americans, where they can express their own culture as it actually would manifest undefiled or whatever by the white empiricist, or rather, you know what I'm saying, empiricist, E, not I.
Yeah.
Yeah, but anyway.
Do we want to look over some more super chats?
Yeah, we should at the end. We have a couple more stories.
Okay. So, yes, this next one is about animals. This week in history, believe it or not, the U.S. Camel Corps was established. The United States Camel Corps was a mid-19th century experiment by the United States Army in using camels as pack animals in the southwestern United States. On May 14th, 1856, this very day, the U.S. Camel Corps began in Texas when 34 camels imported from the Mediterranean were unloaded at Indianola. Led by Secretary of War Jefferson Davis, this 1850s experiment aimed to use camels as superior pack animals for surveying and supplying the arid Southwest. The Army sought to solve transportation issues in the Great American Desert, as camels could carry 600 pounds, twice as much as a mule, and required less water. Major H.C. Wade marched the herds from Indianola to Camp Verde, Texas, which became their base. In 1859, Lieutenant Edward L. Hartz wrote that the superiority of the camel for military purposes in the badly watered sections of the country seems to be well established. The camels readily ate creosote bush, which few other organisms eat. It is thought that this meeting reestablished a biological relationship that was broken when the American ancestors and relatives of the Arabian camel, such as camelopes, became extinct, making an evolutionary anachronism. While successful in trials, the camel's stubbornness and ability to scare horses made them unpopular with soldiers. Despite proving efficient compared to mules, the project was halted by the Civil War. At the peak of the program, the United States Army had 70 camels. Now it gets a little bit wilder. In a February 14, 1861 letter addressed to the Buchanan administration, King Mongkut of Siam referenced the introduction of the camel and offered his collaboration if the U.S. wished to do the same with the Asian elephant. Mongkut reasoned that pairs of elephants could be released in American forests where they would multiply and be captured later for use as beasts of burden in forested areas without roads. Buchanan's successor, President Abraham Lincoln, politely declined the offer on February 3, 1862. Apparently that's how long it took to send a letter back then, arguing that our political jurisdiction, however, does not reach a latitude so low as to favor the multiplication of the elephant, and steam on land as well as on water has been our best and most efficient agent of transportation and internal commerce. So that's pretty cool.
So thanks, but we have boats. Yeah. Appreciate it.
Trains and boats, but we had camels in the army for like 10 years. That's pretty cool.
That's how much people used to like America, too. They're like trying to give us elephants and things. Siam is what, Cambodia today?
I don't know. I
think so.
But yeah, I mean, they probably wanted to sell them to us, so they were probably looking to make money. Apparently, the program cost like the camel program cost $30,000. Today would cost like $300 million.
Well, that's isn't that like an 1850s money though? That's probably is $300 million.
Just about, yeah. By the way, like 50% of our research and images went into the camel story.
Yes, that was the majority of the research for this podcast.
It should have taken off. Camels actually evolved in North America. You know that?
Well, yeah, it actually mentions that here.
Did you already say that?
So what they said was the camels ate a certain type of bush, which nobody else eats in Texas. The camels they brought over were eating creosote bush. So they said, that may have been a food that the American ancestors of the camel ate before they became extinct.
Yeah. They migrated back to the old world or to the old world like a few million years ago.
Yeah.
And then only the alpaca and llama were the camelids.
Oh, yeah.
Stayed.
You would know about that because you were researching alpacas.
Yeah. I'm all into... New world camelids currently.
Yeah, there's camels in Tennessee. Like if we drive over to Nashville, remember that? I don't know if you remember on the way back once, there's this farm on the right-hand side of the highway. There's like zebras and camels there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've seen
that. So if we ever need some camels here, we could possibly, like if the droughts start getting worse, maybe we could invest in some camels.
No, I think they have really bad moods and they will spit on you. I mean, the alpacas.
They bite.
Yeah. No, I'm not really for camels.
Okay.
I'm sort of for them being introduced into desert ecosystems and seeing what could be accomplished.
Well, yeah, sometimes they should be reintroduced to the deserts of the United States.
Yeah. Sometimes introducing ruminants improves the local vegetation. Sometimes it destroys it. It just depends on their eating habits and stuff. But last story?
Yeah, so there is a landmark Supreme Court win for trucking safety. In the recent case, Sean Montgomery versus Caribe Transport 2, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled anonymously against a freight broker who negligently hired a trucking company that hired illegal aliens and had a poor safety record, causing accidents and injuries. As a result of this decision, freight brokers in the United States can now be held liable in each state for negligently giving loads to illegal alien semi-truck drivers. This increases liability for freight brokers and may push many unsafe truck companies out of business. And I saw on X, some people are saying this is huge, that in the industry, this may push like a huge number of truck companies out of business because now they'll have to pay up for all these accidents that are being caused by the truck companies that they hire.
These people, whether they're Russians or Indians, more often Indians, but they'll come in, set up an LLC, contract through someone else who has all the proper licenses. And if anything goes wrong, well, they just collapse the whole LLC And then very quickly, they start a new company and they're back in business because they've been escaping liability. So I think you will actually see a market decrease in the number of like towel heads driving around.
Yeah. So. And it's Eric's been in trucking. We have a neighbor that's also several neighbors that are heavily in the trucking industry. And one of the guys was telling us, these fly-by-night companies, they hire illegal aliens, no driver's license, no insurance on the truck, no registration. Maybe it has plates that are expired or they got off another truck. No, literally no nothing. And sometimes they aren't even paying the workers because they bring them over here and get them involved in some slavery human trafficking thing where they have to work for free for a while to pay back the visa they got them or whatever. Or they just like basically blackmail them. And he said it's impossible for a lot of guys nowadays to compete against these companies because what they're charging per mile is almost nothing. Because if you're not paying your driver, the driver has no license, there's no insurance, there's no nothing. And these companies, like Eric said, they can simply dissolve if there's a lawsuit. So what this case does is it makes it that the freight brokers that hire those companies are also liable. And so from like a Jewish free market capitalism perspective, that's bad. But from a protect your country against illegal immigrant truckers perspective, that's a very positive.
And no, I expect to see. Jackson voted against it, though. We'll see a real difference here. That was a Supreme Court decision, so that's national.
The black female news. Supreme Court judge. I don't know. It said it was anonymous, actually. So that means even the black female Supreme Court justice actually voted for this, which is surprising.
Good deal.
She's one of the libs.
All right. Do you have anything to add on that, Devin?
No, just other than the fact that like every truck stop I've been to over the last few years, you go to like these big truck stops, middle of fucking nowhere. And they're the kind of truck stops where, you know, they've got the showers and everything and trucks actually stay there for, you know, to spend the night and whatnot. And it used to be, growing up, doing a lot of road trips that my family did, when you'd go to these kinds of truck stops, you'd see a bunch of old white guys wearing trucker hats. And I have noticed that, it's not a meme. It's you go into these places now and it's the same kind of guys that pick you up in an Uber. It's some brown, nondescript, ambiguously ethnic brown guy with a Bluetooth headset, yammering on in some indecipherable language, as they fill up their Slurpee. I mean, it's exactly the kinds of random brown people that pick you up give you your food with one of these DoorDash kind of things. It's not only that, it's also, and this is, I guess, a slightly different topic, but now increasingly the truck stops are also run by Indians.
Yeah, no, it's obnoxious. Them in their sweatpants, slip-on sandals, they'll be brushing their teeth, walking around on the headset, on the phone, and it is the smell is tangible, and it's just inescapable. And if you're on the road, like that's the new normal. That is what you like in small towns too. I remember the hotels. Yeah. They did this first with the hotel industry, and then the truck stops are kind of coming second after that. But you go to some small town in the middle of nowhere, and the hotel, probably Indian. The gas station, probably Indians. And it's like, okay, you have India. It's not like we are totally against your existence or your culture. It's not like we hate you. But it's like we don't want everywhere to be India, and that seems like it's been the trajectory. But anyway, this decision, big news, good news, where I think there will be a decrease in that now to some extent. We have several super chats to get to, so let's look on Rumble and see if we can scroll up to the new. Is that the new one there? Okay. White Hebrew Israelite for $3. Thank you very much. 16 is legal in some states, but I believe is the biblical age of consent. Yeah, I mean, your brain isn't mature. Well, actually, for women, the brain matures earlier. For a man, you're not like cognitively mature until 25. So I think major life decisions just generally shouldn't be made at such an early age. And it's also sort of like eugenic to have more neoteny, or the extended displaying of youthful features into later age. It's like, it is Africans who tend to have their first menses at a very early age and like go through puberty at a very early age. It's normal for the higher races. Okay, sorry for, I don't usually take the explicitly supremacist tack here, but it's like, you know, it is what it is. The higher IQ races, let's put it that way, take longer to develop. And I think corresponding with that, we should see an increase in the age of consent as we hopefully improve through eugenic practices over generations. And so we should probably discourage that more R-selective, short-term thinking teen pregnancy behavior. But that's just me. Pistol Ketchup Gang, $5. Thank you very much. On a serious note, we hate NNR because he got us banned from Odyssey. Okay, by whining to Odyssey moderators. Pretty much, this seems like an internal dispute in the chat. I don't feel like the content creators should even take a stand in this. Snow Trout Underground for $20. These people are called troglodytes. They're all fags and try to mess with NNR any chance they get. That's all anyone's talking about is NNR. The stream is just, Nick is a good guy, this guy says.
Yeah.
Doubt. No, I disagree. And then Florida guy, rather Florida Groiper, 1488. Quite a name. $20. Thank you very much. I'm a real white, one word, a real white man. And I'll say this NNR guy is fake as F and loves Gehari, who's an Iranian browned sand nurger. That's how he spelled it.
Okay.
More than actual white people. NNR even said he likes smart black people more than smart white. Okay. If you truly are white, try to communicate like you're white. Thank you very much for the donation, but try to communicate like a white civilized person. Florida Groiper, 1488 for $10 again. Thank you very much. Nick Fuentes is more white looking than Flood and NNR. These guys are just grifters who bring no original content. At least Nick has fancy hand movements. NNR is just fat and gay.
Our chat okay. has become like a war between Groipers and NNR apparently.
Proxy war.
But this guy, he's got money to spend on us. So he cares about
it. I mean, thanks for the donations. Florida Groiper for $10. I will say it's good the community can come together again and air out our grievances. NNR is a homo and not pro-white. I do feel like this is a reunion of some kind in our chat going over a really old beef that has nothing to do with
and
us.
And isn't Nick also a homo and not pro-white?
I've heard, yeah.
I guess maybe that'd be up for debate, but...
Pistol Ketchup Gang for $1. Thank you very much. NNR thinks Jews are fine if they donate to him. Well, that's true. His Jewish donor's name was... D-Bot. He is a sellout POS. Okay.
Well, I mean, if someone's just giving you money or if they're giving you money with strings attached, I think when you get the $7,000 from Benjamin Netanyahu, that's not a donation. There's strings attached to that.
Yeah,
but if you have like definitely. An open give, send, go and a Jewish person donates to it and you don't even know and there's no strings attached, what are you going to do about that?
Well,
it's shekels, you know?
Yeah. Raven Resolve for $20. Thank you very much, Raven. What's the most significant impact of the Blazarian campaign, in your opinion? Consider the viability of voting in general versus combating controlled op Fuentes versus raising JQ awareness. Well, I mean, I don't know what his chances are in his district. It's very elderly, and the 55-plus demographic is so solidly MAGA and on Trump's side. Like, I just talked to this old man, and he was convinced Iran was about to blow us up with nuclear weapons, and we have to be in there, and we, in fact, aren't hitting them hard enough. So,
yeah.
So I don't think Dan's chances are amazing in that district. I do want more people running and setting the precedent that, hey, we can get involved. We have to get involved in speaking up. And it won't always gain traction immediately, but I think the spirit of it is right directionally. And yeah, I mean, I'm glad Dan's out there making noise, which he certainly is. The Real Tuber for $1. What you guys think about the Bills this year? Go Bills.
Is that a sports ball thing?
Yeah, it's the Buffalo Bills football team. Go Bills.
Aren't most sports ball teams owned by Jews?
I think like 80% of them, in fact, yeah.
So if you're a sports ball fan, you should really, you know, think about that.
Reinhardt, what's with all the 1488s? All right, Reinhardt 1488 for $20. Thank you very much. Nick hangs out with Browns because he's insecure about his race, and that's the only time he actually feels white.
That's a good point.
By comparison, I mean, yeah. That makes sense.
There might be some truth to that, actually. There might actually be some truth to that. That's the only time that he feels like he's the white guy, and that's why he snipes at people who would that would not be the case.
As a Mexican, he's climbed to the very top of this like castizo hierarchy, and seeing people who are like infinitely more Aryan than himself has got to be discouraging. Like generationally, he's aspired to finally get to the status he is now, where like maybe he'll be considered white. And like he put in his bloodline, put in a lot of work to get to that point, you know, but it's still not enough. Sorry, Nick. White Hebrew Israelite for $3. Thank you very much. Non-whites are the beasts of the field. Non-whites are animals. Okay. That's one perspective that you, some people have that. Biblical hermeneutics. Kentucky Hobo for $2. The Confederate Army had a camel named Douglas. After he was killed by Yankees, they dispatched a team of snipers to get revenge.
Wait, did they even have, like, I thought they had just had muskets back then. Did they even
have? Well, no, they would have, like, snipers? Yeah, people who were designated snipers. Okay. Like the.
Okay, well, that's pretty base then. Camel revenge. They should make a movie about that.
Maple Sven need to make good movies again about camels.
Yes.
Would Devin ever speak at an RTTL event? Maybe. Also, what beekeeping advice would he give to those living at the community in northern Arkansas?
Well, my understanding is that Arkansas is actually pretty good for, bee country. And you've got a good climate for it. I mean, you guys have cold winters, you know, obviously colder than what I've got here, but you have a lot of vegetation, a lot of variety. You have, you know, a very, very green areas, and the summers don't get, you know, hot like here. It's more, you know, a lot of the genetics that we have for honeybees here originate from Italy, actually. And so the weather is not dramatically different in Arkansas than it is in Italy. So they survive a lot better than they would, you know, in the desert where I'm at. So there's lots of bee people in Arkansas. There's Missouri, the South has a lot of bee stuff. And then you don't have the Africanized bees. I mean, there's some of them have made it into your areas, but it's not like the desert where they thrive. And because the Africanized bees, just like Africanized people, were not designed to survive winters like European bee. You know, it's funny with bees, they actually call it, well, they used to, they're changing it now. They used to call it bee races. And the most gentle bee race is literally, it's called a Caucasian bee. And I'm not making that up. That is the most gentle bee race. And the most ferocious bee race is the Africanized bee race. So, you know, and for the same reasons, funny enough, it's right. Because the Africanized bees, you know, evolved in Africa, where the environment was just way different than the bees that came from Europe. But yeah, Arkansas is a great place for beekeeping. If you're going to get started, you can get started for free too. Well, if you're at least somewhat handy with woodworking, you can build beehives. There's plans all over the internet. You can make a Langstroth hive. You can make and you don't have to pay for bees either. You can get a box and cut a hole in it, hang it in a tree, and you can make a swarm trap. It's almost that easy. There's videos on YouTube that would show you how to do it, and you can get the local feral bees, which will be actually better survivors in your area. Right. So I think that'd be a great place to do beekeeping.
For sure. What about the other question? Would you consider speaking? Okay.
Yeah, I'd definitely be open to that for sure.
Good deal. Yeah, no, I want to get into beekeeping. It's just always somehow the last priority. Too many other home study activities.
Right.
The Shogun for $5. Thank you very much. I work at a truck stop. The demographics are cooked. Hopefully our anti-white government is competent enough to see the brown writing on the wall. Well, white heat.
They're not competent enough to see it.
No, unfortunately. White Hebrew Israelite for $3. Thank you very much. Indians want a diaspora model, much like the Edomites. They said so themselves.
Well, they're not going to get it. Not here, at least.
Well, I mean, they are coming.
Yeah, I mean, so they're coming over, but you know,
definitely we'll send them back. Spread. Can you check the Give, Send, Go again? Scott? All right. Yeah, so where did we... Yeah, just that top one. Midnight Sun for $5. Thank you very much. Arvol, are you willing to rethink your position on Fuentes now that Blazarian has been exposed as an Armenian Jew? Blazarian is not the reason I took that stance on Fuentes. Fuentes' behavior was the reason. And in fact, I was considering breaking my silence on him and making that video even before Dan called. So it just so happened that Dan was thinking about attacking him kind of on a similar time frame. So I was like, well, if Dan's going to potentially, I guess now is a good time. Fuentes is still important as a gateway for those who eventually want to get more serious and join an organization.
He's not even
like
a good gateway
RKTL.
Anymore.
No,
like no, I doubt
favorably
it.
Favorably about Jeffrey Epstein and stuff like yeah. that. He has so many just terrible bad takes right now. There are much better gateways you could pick than even Steven Crowder would be a better gateway than Nick
right.
Fuentes.
Because yep. Fuentes like props himself up to be the cult leader, the leader of a political movement. He actively discourages joining organizations or doing anything else. Like a Crowder viewer or any of these, like a Ben Shapiro
Matt
viewer,
Walsh.
Frankly. Yeah, Matt Walsh. Like they're not going to have all of these hangups about potentially working with RQTL. They listen to that stuff for the ideas. They're not in a cult of personality. And when their ideas mature and develop, they'll naturally organically progress to deeper things. Maybe that'll happen with some of Nick's audience, but they'll be working directly against his very intentional like signaling against us. So no, I totally disagree. I think he is no longer serving any real use. The only thing that you used to be able to say was that he's out there red pilling people. But I said, you know, recently in the statement that I made, like, okay, if you don't get it at this point, you're like making sure we red pill you and bring you in. We're probably not getting the very highest human capital at that point. I think everyone who's going to get it basically gets it. And it's not about red pilling masses anymore. It's about continuing education so that new generations get all the relevant facts. But it's about organizing so that we educate our people appropriately. So
yeah, if you get red pilled by like a Nick TikTok, you're not exactly, you know, that's nothing to brag about.
Exactly. Yeah. White Hebrew Israelite for $3 again. Thank you. I believe God is speaking to us with Africanized bees taking over European bees and gray squirrels taking over the native red squirrels in Britain, and also the red ants taking over black ones. We see it everywhere. Nature.
Lessons from nature.
Yeah. So which bee race is the best at math? Asians? Okay. I guess there's no bee academic Olympiad. So I think that's it for the super chats. And I think, did we actually lose Devin? I see his icon.
It's blank. Yeah.
Yeah. We lost Devin. So I don't know if we want to wait to get him back on in order to say our salutation. Yeah. Yeah, it seems like the session expired. Oh, okay. Well, we almost had him reconnected for a second. Yeah, let's join and see if he's in there now. Yeah, he is. All right, great.
All right, yeah, I'm back here.
Lost you for a minute. Yeah, well, we got through all the super chats. We've heard all of our stories. There is drama in our circles, but I think ultimately we're going to settle out to a maybe more divided right wing, but one where each of the respective factions can go on their own course more productively without, you know, trying to be grouped into this one big tent that really wasn't functional and was leading a lot of people astray. So got to be realistic with what we have to work with. It's a relatively small number of dedicated heritage white Americans in our country and European peoples around the world who it's our responsibility to organize, to build ourselves. We can't wait for non-white saviors to, you know, do enough live streams to change the culture. It's up to us, and it's going to be holistic. It's not going to be just online, just on X, just in government. It's going to be broad spectrum lifestyle change, educating your kids. That's the struggle. That's returning to the land. What it's about is we have to go back to fundamentals. We have to build for ourselves, build for our community, for our people, build up.
I think the movement's actually going to get more united from all this drama, because what I see now when I log on to X is that everybody is now united in their dislike of Nick Fuentes and their support for Dan Bilzerian and their support for Chud. I see a few people straggling and complaining in the comments, but I see a lot more unity than I did previously.
No, I think what you're seeing there is just the new factional lines are going to harden. People will double down and, okay, this means you're on our team. People want that unity. It's true. And they're like locking in where they can get it, where they can find it.
Yeah.
But those sorts of alliance structures are inherently fragile.
Yeah.
So I think even those will break down. And then the natural leaders of the respective factions, whether whole movements or individuals, will kind of take on their role and will start actually building productively. And do, like, Nick will finally get to be the Democrat he's always wanted to be. And the Groypers can go get Democrat Jews elected. Meanwhile, return to the land.
Laura Loomer elected.
Huh?
He can finally get Laura Loomer elected.
Exactly. As he always dreamed. But yeah, no, I think it's, I get what you're saying, but I think it's in a good direction. What's your general read? What's your last perspective to leave us with, Devin?
You mean in terms of like the...
The state of the movement.
Well, I feel like... Well, I think you're right about in terms of what white founding stock Americans, what's in our blood is creating these civilizations. I mean, that's what we've done over and over and over again. I mean, we created America. Like those are who our ancestors are. We're not the types of people that waited for someone else to create something and then heard about it and then got on a boat to go enjoy it. You know, like Nick's ancestors, quite frankly. Mm-hmm. And so, which is why I think another reason why he poo-poos what you're doing. But the people who actually did descend from the pioneers and from the settlers that carved this nation out of the wilderness, that it comes natural to us. This is what our instincts are telling us, that like in the same way that many of our ancestors were fleeing Europe for various reasons, whether it was religious persecution or whatever it was, or maybe just because they had faith in their abilities to go and survive this harsh environment that had so much to give if you put the work in. I feel like the same is true today. You know, we now have dangers in our cities that are difficult to try to repair from within. So what do? Well, we can go create what civilization that we, the kind of civilization that we want to live in out in the wilderness. And maybe we're not the immediate beneficiaries of these things, these communities that we build, but our children are, you know, just like my ancestors that were freezing to death, in New England, hoping that the crops, were enough to feed them through the winter. They didn't get to enjoy the civilization that they laid the groundwork for as much as, a lot of their descendants were. I think people need to start thinking more about building a dynasty, planting that tree, knowing that you're not going to ever be able to enjoy it sitting in the shade of it. Mm-hmm. So, I think that more and more white people are figuring this out, and more white people are going to gravitate, I think, towards things like, what you're doing. And there are other people doing this sort of thing. And I think it's really important what you're doing in terms of, at least as you said, even if it's not, it doesn't set the precedent that we want, at least it'll determine where that line, legal line is. And that's just as important. So,
yeah. And we're a creative people. So no matter what they come back at us with in terms of delimiting our options, we'll find new paths. I mean, whether that means, hey, we team up with some rich guy and buy an island in the Mediterranean and that's the new home base or whatever it is, like we will find a way to build new, better societies as we're facing decaying, corrupted societies. We are a creative people. We have that source within us. Not everyone is tuned into that. You know, some people think power flows out of a spigot from the top down and we're just waiting for that turn to control the dial. But no, that source is within you as a white American, as a descendant of Europe and the great civilizations there. We found civilizations. We create new things. We have that unlimited source in us. Nothing can stop us. There is no stopping our race from creating because it's simply what we do. We make order. We're the people that make order in this world, not from the top down, not with a despot, but by who we are and how we live and how we conceive of law and justice and our virtues. And we're going to hold each other accountable to those virtues and be uncompromising, like Chud is uncompromising about his taking his stance for what he believes in. So emulate Chud.